Hello, this is Ian with the News Gazette, dated Sunday, May 10th, 2020. According to today's News Gazette, we are on day 51 of the state shutdown. As we've been doing each Sunday, we will read the section where staff writer Anthony Zillis has spent an eighth week telling stories of some of those affected by the coronavirus pandemic. The first story is Visiting Mom on Her Big Day. As a young mother, Margie Nunn was always there when her family needed her. As a stay-at-home mom, she provided a household for her family. And when her children had kids, she helped them through difficult times. Anything she had to share, she would share, said her daughter, Sandy Flanders. If you needed something, she would do everything she could to meet that need, even if it took away from her table. That was just her and my dad. She was always that one the grandkids would talk to if they needed something. Grandma was always there. As an 82-year-old, Nunn has lived at Prairie Winds Retirement Home for the last 7 years, unwilling to move in with one of her kids at the risk of imposing. But her family still has been able to care for her. On Thursday, Flanders and her sister, Susie Riggleman, stood outside their mother's window and conversed with her, like all her children do at least once a week. With her mask on, her hearing aids in, and her memory patch affixed, she's able to converse happily with them without too much difficulty. It's been tough for her children not to be able to enter her home and make sure everything is in order, but her first-floor apartment allows them face-to-face contact, at least a few minutes to complement their daily phone calls. She is used to us overseeing things and making sure her hearing aids have batteries and just making sure everything's going smoothly for her, Flanders said. This has been really trying. It's not been easy. For her not to have a visual of us, I worried about how that would affect her mentally. Thankfully, she's on the first floor, so we're able to talk through her window. Flanders says the current situation has tested her trust in her mother's retirement facility because of how reliant she is on them, and Prairie Winds has passed that test. With those weekly visits, she's able to tell that her mother is happy and taken care of, just like she made her kids feel throughout their lives. There's not too much that riles her, and there never has been, Flanders said. I think it's just emotionally for us not being able to hug her and sit there for an hour at a time, like she's used to us doing. But we've all adjusted, and she's always assured us that everything is fine. The next story is The Upbeat Grandmother. Marjorie Howell-Dell marveled at a mother goose that walked with her two goslings in the parking lot outside her window at Prairie Winds of Urbana as her son, Rick, sat on a folding chair in the grass along with his wife, Susan, and son, Neil. It was no surprise to Rick when his mother said she considers herself lucky to live in an apartment like the one she does, where she can have made-to-order cheeseburgers delivered, sit and watch the baby geese waddle, and take visits from her three children who live nearby. She's a gift, he said. She's possibly the most relentlessly positive person I've ever met. With nursing homes and assisted living facilities shut down to visitors to the pandemic, the 93-year-old Howell-Dell can't come and go like she usually does. So multiple times a week, she pulls up her chair to the windowsill, sets her coffee mug down, and has a conversation with at least one of her three kids. For Rick, making the drive from his home in Bonneville isn't difficult, especially because of how much she enjoys the visits, when they talk about topics ranging from current events to sports to her grandchildren. It's great because although my mother is 93, she's very alert and very interested, and she still enjoys people, conversing, exchanging. She's an avid reader, she said. So, it's very easy for me and others to visit her because she has things to talk about. Normally, Howell-Dell likes to take long walks on her son's property in the country, or go out to eat at the Courier Cafe or other diners around Champaign-Urbana, similar to the one she and her husband used to own in Tinley Park. She's a little frustrated by the pandemic, of course, and that's not just because she's shut in. It's that even at 93, she knows she can do much more. She's getting a little impatient with the process, Rick said. Not with the people she deals with at Prairie Winds, because they've really made an effort to be thoughtful. But as someone who's capable, it's frustrating for her that she cannot. That doesn't quell her upbeat nature, though. Last week, she posted a sign on her door thanking the staff and telling them, "You say you take such good care of this old gal." I think because she's positive and joyful, she's also grateful, Rick said. The next story is the hospitality worker. When her hours were cut back to 2 days a week as a maid at Candlewood Suites, Hortensia Morales was left to cobble together a living to feed and house herself and her four children. But that wasn't even her biggest worry. Her father in Mexico was seriously ill, and after losing his job, he wasn't able to pay for the medication he needed. When her name was pulled out of a hat for a $750 prize that Visit Champaign County set aside for hospitality workers, Morales and John Hammond, the hotel's general manager, couldn't hold themselves together. She cried and wept, Hammond said. She said, "My dad can now go to the doctor," and that just kind of broke my heart. We all started crying. Morales, who is a year into her second stint at the hotel, has seen her job change over the last 2 months. Greater care is now taken to meticulously clean each room, which she does while wearing protective equipment. Hammond has done his best to keep his staff working, despite having only around 30% occupancy since the stay-at-home order went into place in March. But he said the hotel can only afford so much. When Visits Champaign County asked for nominees to receive a $250 gift from the Tourism Bureau, the CU Hotel Lodging Association, and other contributors, he immediately thought of Morales. "She works so hard, and she always has a smile," Hammond said. "She's got a beautiful spirit." The $250 award went to 42 hospitality workers, and two of those were picked in a drawing for the $750 reward. Hammond couldn't think of a better person to win the lucky prize. When, out of all those names, her name was pulled, "You can call it luck, you can call it whatever you want. I believe it was destiny," he said. "When her name was pulled, I was like, you have got to be kidding. We were over the moon." The next story will be The Graduate. The small taste of teaching was exactly what Nia Curtis hoped for when the University of Illinois education major stepped into a second grade class at Dr. Howard Elementary School in January as a student teacher. "I kept telling my mom and my co-op, I know I want to do this, because every day there was something rewarding," Curtis said. "It was either a gift from a student, or a student really getting an idea that I want to teach, or them saying something funny." As she headed into spring break, Curtis was looking forward to the culmination of her 4 years as a college student. For 6 weeks, she'd get to lead the class almost all by herself. When she left the building on that final day, she knew she'd come back prepared to take on that role. Of course, that didn't happen. And like all full-time teachers in Illinois, she's left to figure out how to approach online learning. Her school days consist of video conferences and online activities with her second grade students, as she and her mother, who is a high school teacher, plan their calls at different times. "Doing Zoom calls with a bunch of second graders is hilarious," she said, "because they can't handle it." Curtis is back home in Chicago, finally after spending a few months in her campus apartment near the new CAMS location on Green Street, a busy corner that all of a sudden became eerily quiet in mid-March. She spent her days on Zoom calls with students and taking shifts at her job at Potbelly's down the street. Curtis says she's a natural extrovert and loves planning parties, so she had already booked hotels for many of the 22 guests who were planning to come see her graduate next Sunday. She and her best friends had devised a plan of exactly where they were going to sit in the education building so their parents could see them, and tables were reserved at restaurants. "It was so disappointing," she said. "Those are my closest friends, and we live so far away that we don't get to graduate together." Now, her graduation robe hangs in her closet. She took it out last week when a photographer friend said he could take pictures of her around campus. She took the traditional photo in front of the alma mater statue, without having to wait in the line that goes down the street on graduation day. And she took pictures on the quad and in front of the education building. She may throw on the robe on graduation day, when the virtual commencement will be held. She'll get together with a few family members while abiding by social distancing standards, and celebrate in the only way she can. She's unsure of what the future will hold. Curtis hopes to either teach in Chicago or Champaign next year, but she's not sure how the process will unfold as she tries to set up interviews from her childhood bedroom. Curtis has long looked forward to the day when she'd step into her very own classroom. Now she's not sure when that will be, and if that will ever even take place this fall. As a teacher, you dream of the day when you get to have your classroom decorated how you want. You get those students who are all your own, she said. I feel like I'm grieving that that might not happen, that I might not be able to have my first year teacher experience. The next story is the COVID-19 doctor. Dr. Saad Adani could feel the anxiety setting in as COVID-19 cases were first diagnosed in Seattle and New York in January and February, both personally and across his group of hospitalists at Carle. As the associate medical director for Carle's hospitalists group, Adani went as far as to lead daily meetings to assess how his fellow physicians were feeling. Then, patients began showing up and testing positive for the disease. And all of a sudden, the feelings changed. In the beginning, there was anxiety of how this disease would be, how the surge would be, how many patients get infected, and how we were going to deal with this, Adani said. Once you see the patient or the individual behind the disease, all that fear goes away. Then you start focusing on treating that patient as a whole, which I think is very important. While different from the anxiety of the oncoming disease, plenty of stress still exists. Adani put in 12-hour shifts for 7 days straight, then gets a week off. He rotates with two other hospitalists caring for patients with COVID-19, which is different from anything any of them have encountered. As a medical student and doctor in India from 1997 to 2004, Adani saw plenty of patients with infectious diseases, including tuberculosis, cholera, and rabies. In ways, he tries to treat COVID-19 like other infections. The difference is that those diseases all had known treatments. So he and doctors across the county have to stay up to date constantly with new treatments and research. Early on, hydroxychloroquine received attention, and later, plasma transfusions and remdesivir were treatments thought to have some effect. Best practices, though, sometimes change from one day to the next. How to treat a heart attack has already been established many years back, he said. How to treat diabetes, that has already been established. How to treat a stroke. But with the COVID disease, you're learning and practicing at the same time, which is very, very unique. You rarely get to see that as a physician where, as you practice, the guidelines keep changing. At the end of his grueling shifts, Adani comes home to his wife and two children, ages 13 and 9, whom he has to stave off from hugging him. He sleeps in a separate room, uses his own bathroom, eats by himself with separate utensils, and tries to keep his distance. He tries to de-stress at home, watching movies, talking with relatives on the phone, and interacting with his wife and children from a distance. Adani has come to realize this life probably won't end until a vaccine is developed, which could take another year or more. I would say it's overwhelming, but what we have come to realize is that this is going to be a marathon, he said. We have to learn to live with the coronavirus, but I would say everyone has been very supportive. We make sure everyone gets a break, and we're encouraging everybody to focus on the small things, which are very important in times like this. Like connecting with your friends, cousins, talking with your parents, catching up on some of the things that you didn't have time for, like movies or something. And sometimes just to not be overwhelmed with this. There's always a lingering fear, though. Adani said he was never afraid of being infected at the hospital before COVID-19. But even though he said Carle has enough personal protective equipment, he still worries that he'll catch the disease even while wearing a gown, gloves, protective headgear with a face guard, and a mask. When he saw the wave coming, the 40-year-old made sure to draw up his will. You never know, if you get infected, how sick you'll get. We're seeing some young patients who are sick, not elderly, Adani said. It's amazing just to see this happening. I wouldn't have been worried before all of this getting sick in the hospital. The last few months have been a roller coaster of emotions. When a patient is discharged, he feels happiness and relief. When they're moved to the ICU, sadness seeps in. He knows he's not alone in his anxieties, fears, emotions, and exhaustion, and that helps him stay motivated during a fight that is far from over. We used to work as a team before, but you can see the camaraderie at a whole different level, he said. And you also see the small things that we didn't appreciate before. Just for example, when a patient gets discharged, the room gets cleaned by our housekeeping staff. But now I understand how important that has been the whole time. So, small things like that, you appreciate it a lot. And our next story will be The Young Journalists. The meetings between reporters and editors of The Monday Times, weekly newspaper in Urbana, had to take place last week on an island in the Nintendo Switch game Animal Crossing, speaking to each other in animal form. It's the only way 9-year-old Juniper Gaines and her brother, 7-year-old Deshil, have been able to meet with their classmates since schools closed in March. They're really missing their friends, said their father, Brian Gaines. The Monday Times was born out of boredom. Home from school, Juniper and Deshil normally sift through the comics and the word puzzles in each day's news gazette. So their mother, Brianna Lawrence, suggested they start a newspaper. They kind of take after their mother, and she's always creating things, said Dad. They were just kind of restless, and she said, "What can you do to keep busy?" She just kind of jumps right on it and started writing. They had to get some help from her to get the formatting in the paper printed. But Juniper kind of wrote the screenplay the same way. They decided to call it The Monday Times, and deliver on the only day the News Gazette doesn't publish. There's no newspaper on Monday, and everyone is kind of bored, Juniper said. So we wanted to entertain people while they're at home. So they began calling and texting their friends from their parents' phones and meeting them on Animal Crossing to organize a staff of contributors. In the April 27th edition, Juniper wrote the headline of the day, with the all-caps title, School Canceled, after Governor J.B. Pritzker announced that schools will be closed for the rest of the year. School just got canceled for the rest of the school year because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the article began. Some kids might argue with me, but I like school and I don't want it to be canceled. 8 writers from age 4 to 11 submitted stories and comic strips. In addition to his story titled Coronavirus News, about the importance of being careful and staying home, Deshil compiled a word scramble. The first story included an advertisement for May subscriptions to the Monday Times, which cost $3. 18 people subscribed to the print edition, all within biking distance for Juniper and scootering distance for Deshil. 3 more paid for an online subscription. Juniper and Deshil are learning both the difficulties of beating deadlines and the harsh reality of their jobs as editors. They've had to assign stories for kids who want to write comics and make sure stories fit the criteria of a newspaper article. The family also had to buy a new printer to replace their old one that was not working properly. And for 2 weeks, they've managed to work through those struggles to get a paper out. The offerings in the May 4th edition include 2 stories about fires in town, complete with a contributed photo. Deshil's story about the cancellation of the 1919 Stanley Cup, playoffs that he learned about from a book he's reading, a recipe for brownies, a joke column, a story about hosts, and Juniper's story about her friend Theo and his outdoor museum of interesting things. Subscriptions go through the end of the month, but that doesn't mean the Monday Times is going anywhere. When the summer months hit, our goal is to keep it going through May and June, Juniper said. But if we can, we want to do July, when everything gets back to normal, which is probably going to be a while. It's going to be hard to do a Monday paper, but we'll do it if we can. Next story is the Chinese community. Carle Foundation hospital nurse Hong Yang was concerned about her friends, family, and healthcare workers in her native China when she fired off an email in January, long before the COVID-19 pandemic caused widespread shutdowns across her new country and community. Back home, hospitals and other organizations needed all of the medical masks they could get as they tried to fight off the infectious disease. In 2 days, Carle Hospital donated 2,000 masks to let me send back to China, she said. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm only a small nurse working at Carle Hospital, and they see that I'm worried and they're concerned too. I feel so honored and I feel so proud. When March rolled around and COVID-19 reached Champaign-Urbana, Yang said personal protective equipment began to become more scarce at Carle. Working on one of the floors where COVID-19 patients stayed, she said guidelines became more stringent around conserving masks, which they needed to wear constantly around patients. So Yang and various members of CU's Chinese American community sprang into action. In March, when this was coming up, I was like, wow, this is the time. We need to step up because we're all together, Hong said. This is our home, Carle Hospital, and the Champaign-Urbana local community. Spearheaded by Yangguang Lian, a research engineer at University of Illinois' Micro and Nanotechnology Lab, and the president of the Chinese American Association of Central Illinois, and others, they devised ways to address the shortage of PPE among local hospitals. Some mined their contracts at various factories in the U.S., some contacted family and friends in China, and others sewed masks and donated what they had. Fiona Kun Yao, a U of I assistant professor of business administration, rallied local Chinese and Chinese American residents on WeChat, a popular mobile app among Chinese. We started donations in late March, and it's not easy, Yao said. Even hospitals don't know where to get PPE. The entire country was running short on PPE. I always teach our students about team building. I always tell them there is no great individual, but you can always make a great team. Some of us donated money, some of us donated masks, and some of us tried to find good quality PPE. Within a day, Yao said 595 masks were donated. After raising $6,000 and vetting various manufacturers to make sure their masks were FDA approved, they purchased 5,000 surgical masks and 1,150 KN95 masks to donate to local hospitals, along with other public service organizations. Donations flooded in from a community that is keenly aware of the impact of the virus. Those same family and friends that Yang worried about a few months ago are now concerned about her safety, going so far as to send money and masks from their homes in China to Champaign. I think every Asian American here is still cautious about this disease, Yang said. We want this disease to be done. We think everybody has an obligation to do your job and stay home, and if you need to go out, wear your mask. In all, the local Chinese community has donated and facilitated contributions of a total of 23,807 N96, KN95, and surgical masks, 2,157 handmade masks, and 10,000 gloves. And until the fight is over, Lian said the community will do everything it can to help. I'm so proud that our Chinese American society can do something for our local hospital and other places, Lian said. We're so proud that our community could work together to fight the virus. This is very important for us. I mentioned in the WeChat, note that our doctors and nurses at our hospitals need help because they cannot fall down. They fight in the front line. They guard our society. That is very important. And next, the story we'll go to is the social workers. Eva Martone and Stephanie Minold-Smith work to build trust with students every day as social workers for 7th and 8th graders at Urbana Middle School. They help them deal with struggles that can be difficult to identify, like depression, food insecurity, or abuse at home. Trying to identify those difficulties through the phone or the computer screen over the last few months has not been easy. Honestly, it's been really, really challenging, Menold Smith said. The basis of our job is connections with our families and having that face-to-face time to really identify needs and how to best support our students. This has been really hard because we can't see them face-to-face, and we're relying on technology to communicate with them via phone, via email, via video Zoom call. And so it's been difficult. It's been hard for us to truly support them and connect with them when we're not face-to-face. Since spring break, Marton and Menold Smith have spent time checking in on students however they can, in whatever way the families prefer. They work to make sure they have access to technology and internet, and at times deliver them papers they need to participate in school. They're also providing resources for entire classes so teachers can weave in social-emotional learning into their regular curriculum. Some kids, they say, are more comfortable communicating through technology than in person anyway. But they know that no amount of digital communication can replace the interaction they receive at school. Our kids are at a developmental stage where they need that social interaction in person, with adults and with peers to help guide them through a huge developmental change, Marton said. Even having the structure of the school day for some kids is very reassuring, and taking that away is one more unknown to add to everything else going on. Whether school will be in session as normal when the fall semester rolls around is unknown. And for Marton and Menold Smith, the realization that students might still be at home in August has been one of the most difficult aspects of the last few months. Teachers and staff in our building, we thrive on that connection with our kids and how we can educate them and meet their needs in the best possible way, Menold Smith said. And so if we have to go do this again in the fall, I mean, we're going to do whatever we have to do because that's the best thing to keep our community safe. But it's difficult for me to think that that might happen, because I miss my students, I miss my families. I miss being able to connect with them and offer mental health support for them on a daily basis. That was the last story of the coronavirus response section, and that's also about all the time we have for part one of today's reading of the News Gazette. This has been Ian with the News Gazette, dated Sunday, May 10th, 2020. Stay tuned for part two of today's reading in just a few minutes. Thanks for joining me, and stay safe.